Jacob Niemeyer, welcome to Power and Witness. And I just wanted to do a little post-show wrap-up here, maybe touch upon some topics we missed, or go fuller, deeper into your organization, Vera Aqua, Vera Vita.
Nailed it.
I'm sorry?
Nailed it.
Okay. And you mentioned that you'd like to maybe talk more about the what and how of what your organization does. You're the founder, executive director. We talked about the education aspect. Mm-hmm. And what are some other things that it does?
Yeah, so kind of we have a threefold programming approach on how we deliver on our mission. And first part is WASH, which those that have listened to the episode with Life on the Rock, where I talked about that WASH stands for water and sanitation hygiene. Mm-hmm. And within that program, we have our community development program where we implement a clean water or wastewater solution in that community. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole process that we go through in that to ensure that the solution that we're implementing is sustainable for generations to come. Because, you know, in addition to recognizing that there's a great need, we also don't want to just be giving solutions that aren't going to last.
Right.
And there's a lot of facets to that. Obviously, one of the ones we've touched on already in the show and the episode was kind of that conversation around how the people factor into that and how we need to empower them and equip them and recognize the dignity of Christ in each of those people and the potential that they have. But also another piece of that is kind of looking at the sourcing of materials, the sourcing of the technologies that are used to treat the water, to clean the water, to, you know, power the electricity that's needed for the pumps and the treatment processes. We really focus on simple yet complete systems that with the materials that can be sourced locally. So that, again, it's creating that system of sustainable change in that community. And, you know, the aspiration, right, is to move the needle for these community members and these people that in the communities that we're serving from a place where they have no clean water to begin with at all to where they have an easily accessible source of clean water that is affordable at a rate that they can cover the cost of and the extra money that is raised or collected from the sales of that water. They can then use to invest in future maintenance and operational and repair improvements. And hopefully, if there's enough money, if the rate is at a high enough value that is still affordable to the people, the system can set aside some of those funds to plan and develop future expansions of the system. And these systems are decentralized and privatized, if it's not already clear from what I'm describing. So we're looking at, we walk alongside of them from day one until the solution has commenced operation. It's not that we're gone and we're not, like, you know, no longer available to them, but we hand off ownership back to them and we step aside. And that's where we go from solidarity with them to subsidiarity. And it's operating at the lowest level of operation, which is Catholic social teaching, right? And so that's our model. That's kind of the what of what we do with the WASH programming. And then we have our education programming, which I did talk about on the episode as well. And that has the WASH component and the theology of the body component. And then the third program is our missionary program, where we're offering opportunities for those to go on mission with us.
Usually from people from the United States.
Yes.
Now, like part of that washing part would be the pumps. You mean like installing pumps, cisterns, or what's the...
Yeah, great question. Yeah, so it depends on the community's situation. So it depends on where their source water is, quality of that source water. Let's give you an example, because examples are usually the most clarifying. For instance, the first community we ever served, the source water for that community is an irrigation canal. That water is highly contaminated. They were drinking it regularly before we entered the community. We implemented a clean water system to treat that water, treatment technology. We just pulled the water straight from the canal through the treatment technology called the Living Water Treatment System, which is a partner nonprofit NGO that we've worked with before that has a technology to do basic filtration and disinfection.
It'd be like a membrane?
Yes, it's a membrane filter with chlorine disinfection. And out the other end, and I'm simplifying this obviously, but out the other end comes clean water.
Okay. So you make like a little pipe system and or an aqueduct? Is that called an aqueduct?
No, this would just be a simple piping, pumping and piping system. But this that one, for instance, was very, very short. As far as piping and pumping distance. I mean, the irrigation canal is literally right next to where we put the treatment facility because it just so happens to be like right kind of in the heart of the community. And that's kind of another thing. Like, we want to make the water accessible to as many members of the community as easily as possible. And so we really focus on like a single point location where people can come and get the clean water. And in this case, it just so worked out that we didn't have to pump the water very far because it was right there. But there's another project we're currently working on where we're having to pump it 3.5 kilometers. So that's, you know, that's a different story just to get it to the center of the community. So every community situation is a little bit different.
And that would be like a plastic PVC piping? Or is that?
Okay. 2-inch PVC in that case. And the other one was 2-inch PVC as well. The one I mentioned previously.
And like parts for all that, like replacement filters, they would, they'd get that from the United States or?
Nope. Those filters, chlorine tablets, pumps, all of that is sourced locally in country.
And it'd be like electric pump or?
So it's, in that case, the pump is electric power and they have electricity in that community. And so again, every community situation is different. We're currently looking at a couple communities that are on our horizon to serve next that we're going to have to consider possibly some alternative energy sources like solar or some other sources to power the pumps that are maybe needed for those communities. But, you know, a little bit of a tailor fit solution to those people's situations.
Have y'all ever set up like a windmill type thing or?
No, we haven't. But I mean, we wouldn't be opposed to it, obviously. Like if it works, it works.
We see that throughout the Midwest. You always see those things.
Those huge windmills. We are also looking at some other alternative technologies for like treatment as well to kind of bridge the gap while we're into a community because it can take a year to a year and a half from initial engagement with the community before we're at a point where they can begin seeing access to clean water flowing from a system that we've put in place. And so we're looking at some alternate, you know, technologies to kind of bridge that gap in the meantime. There's some water condensing technologies, particularly one with an organization that we're beginning to collaborate with that we're looking to acquire that we could then bring into a community and it can produce 100 gallons per day consistently, which is not a lot, right? But it's enough to like begin to get them a taste, pun intended, of clean water and begin to get their eyes open to see the impact. And that just makes them further invested in what we're doing, right?
And that's a condensing system.
Yeah, so it's an atmospheric condenser.
How would that work? That's not like a Star Trek.
Atmospheric. There's water, and nobody can see us right now because we're on an audio podcast. But between you and I right now, there's enough water for us to have, each of us to have water in this atmosphere in the air between you and I right now for enough of us for us to have water for all of our needs for today, each of us and more probably. And so like that's, it's just condensing that water that's, you know, evaporating.
Do you have to, you have to heat it up some and then condense it out or?
So the I mean, you need to cool it to condense. Condensing is a cooling process. So, but you know, one of the other things too that like we're really like, just we're trying to be creative. We don't really have a, if it's not clear by like our programmatic approach and our project delivery, we don't really have like, this is like the technology or this is like the solution that we do. Like we really tailor fit to the needs of the community. So we don't want any community to feel like they're getting left behind. And that's kind of unfortunately what has happened with some of the global development surrounding the water crisis is, you know, it's so easy to dig a well and oftentimes well water is already clean and filtered by the natural processes. And so when a community quote unquote needs water, and an organization comes in and say, well, we know how to dig wells, we know that process, let's do that. Well, what if that community doesn't have groundwater as a viable option? Which is the case in a lot of communities that we're serving. So those communities get forgotten, they get left behind because they're not within the scope of what that organization is able or capable of doing. So we're really kind of bucking that trend a little bit too, I would say.
Don't ask me why, but I remember as a Boy Scout, we were taught about the solar still. Uh-huh. Like you'd have maybe like a piece of plastic, hopefully, I don't know if it has to be transparent, but yeah, you could dig a hole, put plastic over it, maybe throw in some vegetation even, and you could, I guess it would heat up, warm up, and you draw moisture from the, and then the plastic would have like a maybe a little rock in it that would give a low point. The water would drip into a cup. And is any bigger scale stuff done with that? I always think about sometimes if I was on a raft somewhere in the middle of a saltwater ocean. Yeah. You know,
those become really challenging at scale, right? So unfortunately not. I mean, I'm always trying to keep a pulse, our team and our board of directors.
Yeah.
Folks that are involved in our organization, we're always trying to keep a pulse on new upcoming technologies finding ways to be creative in addressing some of these problems. But there's a reason why there's some tried and true methodologies, because they work and they're effective and they're cost efficient.
Yeah.
So we kind of typically operate with those. But I mean, of course, you know, never going to exclude something just because it doesn't sound like it could work. We're going to investigate if it seems viable.
I remember reading an article about Israel, how they got their fresh water.
Mostly desalination nowadays.
Like, I thought they have like a, does that include like the membrane, the plastic? It's like a twisting process. They would force it through membranes that would actually.
RO, probably reverse osmosis. I don't know for sure what you're describing, but I know for a fact that Israel, the bulk of their water is coming from
the reverse ocean.
Osmosis desalination.
Okay, I thought that was amazing that they could make that work economically. You know, you could just, you think like in the old days, maybe like in a big Navy ship, I think they just used diesel fuel and heated up they boiled it, right? They boiled the seawater. And, but now there's, I guess, other technologies. So, on the education part, I thought that was interesting too, to be more efficient and two, I guess part of the, like you mentioned, like a well water, groundwater, whatever, that could be polluted by, we hear all about lithium now. Like
heavy metals.
Heavy metals that battery
mercury,
production.
Lithium.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. It's starting to become a lot of lithium mines in developing countries. So becoming more and more common that water sources tend to be contaminated with heavy metals.
And what do you do with that? I mean, how do you get the...
So it depends on what concentration they're at, right?
Yeah.
If they're above, so we try to follow the EPA, US EPA, Environmental Protection Agency standards on water quality, which are typically the best in the world.
Yeah.
And so if they're above those, what are called MCL, maximum contaminant levels, we are going to address them, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
There's filters, depending on the heavy metal, there's membrane filters that can remove some heavy metals. There's, you know, settling processes that help with some of that, so on and so forth. But you just don't, you typically try to avoid water sources that have those in them if there's other options. Or if there's not, then obviously you address the need and there's technologies that can do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you mentioned the education component. I mean, that's huge. Like for us, like I would say there's kind of really two key differentiators for us as an organization, right? This is what I would say. And this is kind of what we're founded on. One, it's really focused effort on being sustainable. And that, you know, involves everything that we've already talked about, right? We want to bring lasting, sustainable solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And two, and we haven't even like really hit on it. I mean, we're on a Catholic podcast right now. We're on EWT and we're talking technology and, you know, engineering and all that. And that's all well and good, right? But that's only half of the need, right, of these people. The other need is spiritual. We're kind of really inspired by the message of Pope John Paul II when he said, if we're doing mission work and we're not bringing the good news of the gospel, then we're wasting our time. Or it's purported that he said that, or paraphrasing, right? And we really operate with that mentality, right? Because here's the thing. In reality, if we're just meeting a physical need, then how are we different than any other secular humanitarian aid organization, right? We got to meet a spiritual need. Otherwise, the person is not really going to thrive fully as God intended them. And our aspiration is to see these people go from just simply surviving in body and soul to thriving as God intended them.
Right.
Integrated body and soul, right? Mm-hmm. And so we do that through, and we do that, I would argue also, this key differentiation, I would say, as far as I'm aware, we may be the only overtly Catholic organization doing work specifically just with the global water crisis. Of course, you have like Catholic Relief Services and you have Cross Catholic. Mm-hmm. And they do international development work, but they do all sorts of stuff. They don't do just water. And I'm a strong believer that, like, and I've seen it, I haven't been to a lot of developing countries and traveled a lot, that like water is the one that if you don't address it, then there's almost no chance of development, of these people getting out of their economic, you know, poverties. Mm-hmm. It's just almost impossible, right? Mm-hmm. And then if we don't address the spiritual need, then we just create secular systems and secular, you know, change. And it's only meeting half the need. So we bring the theology of the body to bear. And as kind of the way that we introduce these people, the living water of Jesus Christ. So in addition to our WASH, water, sanitation, hygiene, education workshop, we integrate in the theology of the body. So we have a 3 half-day workshop that we spent like a year and a half developing, working with, some theologians, some theology of the body experts, and a bunch of like people in the WASH sphere. There's some organizations that do a bunch of education curricula for developing countries. And we built our own kind of standalone three half-day workshop that we implement in every community that we serve. And that is shared and taught to as many people from that community that want to come and experience that. And it's very hands-on. It's very interactive. It's not a lecture. We give a lot of, you know, it's engaging. We have activities, as I was describing on the show earlier. You know, it's just one of those things that's, it's a very like hopeful way that we try to like integrate and teach some of these basic principles of water, sanitation, hygiene, and integrating this beautiful teaching of the theology of the body to softly introduce them to that in a way that hopefully untaps the desire in their hearts to live out a more fully integrated life and nourishing their body and their soul and through the physical water and the living water of Jesus Christ that we introduce them to.
What would be like some of the maybe bullet points you remember, like from the theology of the body aspect that you would teach them?
Yeah.
Like you mentioned human dignity,
yep,
made for communion with God and with one another.
But I think one of the biggest ones, and this is, you know, this is just a, this is the Arian heresy, if I'm not mistaken, right? Which is the disconnecting of the body and the soul, right? The separation of the two. We all know, as faith-filled Catholics, we're integrated, body and soul. And unfortunately, even within the Catholic Church, it's been infiltrated by quite a bit. Even though we don't realize it, it has just disconnect of the body and soul. And we want to like enrich that in the lives of these people. Like what you do with your body and how you treat your body and how you care for your body and how you care for your the people that are in your life, your family, your friends, your spouse, your children, you know, how you care for yourself, how you care for your environment around you. Those may all seem like, if you're talking just physical needs, how you address all those in the people, those may just seem like physical things. But we know that as faith-filled Catholics, that's more than just that. Because what we do with our body reflects our soul, reflects our spirit, and it becomes spiritualized.
Right.
And so kind of that's another aspect. That would be another bullet point. Of course, we also introduce them at a high level to like, what does it mean and the theology of the body to like talk about that in relationship with man and woman in the context of marriage. What does that mean for you know, our relationship with God and how we reflect in our relationship with our spouse, mm-hmm. and what that reflects of God in our relationship mm-hmm. with God, and kind of this threefold, like Trinitarian, like everything's kind of a Trinitarian relationship, right? So, you know, God the Son, or sorry, God the Father, Jesus Christ the Son, and the Holy Spirit, the love between them, right, is the same kind of interplaying relationship that we have in the context of a marriage, like mm-hmm. husband, wife, and the love between them, it results in their child, mm-hmm. right? Same within the church, right? And we talk about that as well. So, you know, Christ the head, the church the body, and the love between them as the fruits of the Spirit operating and working in his church to bring about transformation and conversion right. of heart and mission and really living out the virtues and the call of the gospel. So it's kind of integrating all of that, right? But it's at like, if we're not going deep into the theology, because you have to keep mm-hmm. in mind, these are very poor, very sadly uneducated people. And so we're introducing things and kind of planting a seed, we hope.
And this is in Peru.
In Peru, where we're working, this is true in any developing country. I mean, these people are, sadly, because of their poverty, their lack of access to education is prevalent. Their lack of ability for upward mobility is prevalent. So, I mean, these people just, but what's also beautiful is they have, even though they have, you know, in many ways, like intellectually ill-formed or lack of form for mm-hmm. like theology or intellectual understandings of the faith, where there is faith, it is rich and it is like simple yet like on fire, right? Mm-hmm. And that's very true where we work in Peru. I mean, these people are, we have so much to learn from them. Like, I go on these mission trips that we take, and it's just like, why are they smiling so much? They're so happy. They have so little, you know?
Yeah.
It just changes your worldview, you know? But yet, what I've found, like, below the smile, they have this smile. They're so grateful for everything they have. But if you really look into their eyes, a lot of times you'll see a lot of sorrow. And a lot of like pain and suffering, and that moves the heart. I mean, like, I want to be around these people. I want to serve these people. Like, I want to learn from them, and I want to serve them. And together we can make the world a better place. And that's the other thing too. Like, if we're like looking at these people and realizing the potential that they have, like that's untapped. Like, how much more? And we talk about this in the context of like abortion, right? I mean, my goodness, the same applies here.
Yeah.
Like, how many lives that have been aborted could have been the person to solve cancer?
Right.
Or the same applies here. How many people have so much potential, it's just untapped because they can't get out of their poverty?
Right.
Because they can't get an education, because they're struggling to survive, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of that desire to see like that thriving, and if they're thriving, the world thrives. So that we all thrive as the human body, the human, you know, the church ultimately thrives.
Yeah,
so
we were talking off camera earlier, but went to Ethiopia like over a year ago, and we went to a parish out in the country, and I was struck by the same thing: their joy and their happiness, and but you know, have a very poor in the way they lived. But yeah, I was really struck by that happiness. And like what you just said too, at the we were outside of Addis Ababa like a half hour or something mm-hmm. in Moju. And you'd meet some young people or Dira Dawa, they had like this big, they were eating this chat, this like a drug that they would chew, a leafy mm-hmm. chew in a, and some of the guys were addicted, especially the men, and you know, they were just like walking the streets and everything, and just in that haze of that. And they had the Missionaries of Charity were there, and it was like this oasis. They had like grass, literally, and they had like a lawn
in the middle of a desert.
But it was just such an image of the kingdom of God, and what some gospel living or gospel injected values, or people that were filled with the gospel to come and work and help others, and what, you know, can be done, and yeah, how debilitating the poverty or the addiction was, and lack of opportunity for education. I guess that struck me especially, like to see a young person that was aimless, you know, and didn't have the opportunities, or was drunk in the middle of the day and stuff. And it's like, yeah, it was a deep sense of poverty, you know.
And it just kind of breaks the heart a little bit when you see that, like the potential that person has that's just unrealized because they don't have the opportunities that we have, you know. And then at the same time, like, it breaks your heart when you see somebody that has the opportunities that we have but doesn't take advantage of the potential that they could. So
yeah, I would feel guilty too. I mean, what opportunities I've had. Yeah. What have I done the best I could? But you know, the other thing that strikes me is you're talking about that body soul unity, that human being is a union of a body soul. There's one
incarnate, right?
Yeah,
Karen incarnate.
And like in the West, we separate it in the sense, I think oftentimes in saying, well, it doesn't really matter what we do with our body. It's just this.
Correct.
Fundamental spiritual option, like sexually or how we live, or even like transgender. Right? I just change, make my body whatever I think it is, you know.
Yeah, I can still call myself spiritual. Have a relationship with.
But you, in this context, you're speaking about.
It's kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
It's kind of the opposite there.
Like you're talking about caring for the body properly.
It's because they. They don't. We've seen, it's kind of like I was describing, like where we work in Peru, I'll just go to concrete examples here. Like these people have rich faiths. They're walking in, you know, in many ways on fire for the Lord. But there's this pretty drastic disconnect with what that means for their body. And they're caring for their body and caring for the body and their family and their friends. And and part of that has to do with education, right? They don't understand and also limited resources and other things. But I think a lot of times it just has to do with it is that disconnect, right? It is kind of the same problem, but it's more on the raw visceral level, like of basic survival, right? Like freedom now, like all of our basic survival needs are met and some with comfort in the Western world.
Right.
So like now what we do with our bodies doesn't matter because we have all of our comforts met.
Yeah.
What they do with their bodies doesn't matter in some sense in the developing countries that we're working with because they don't have the resources or capacity or knowledge that they're just trying to survive.
Right.
But also that makes them, how do I say, like complacent and settle.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like we want to inject like inspiration into them and like inject like, yes, it's hard. Yes, it's hard to walk out of this. And it will be. But you know what? That's the way to thriving, right? Yeah. That's the way to flourishing. That's the way to human flourishing is nourishing and integrating the body and the soul together, right? So that's one of our aspirations.
And when you see their faith, what is it that strikes you? What catches your attention? What tells you, hey, this is real, this is something we don't have back
home? But, it's really the simplicity, honestly, like the faith, the trust in God. Example. The mission center that we stay at when we go to Peru and work in the north of Peru in Piura is a mission center called Santissimo Sacramento. And they house missionaries. They do a bunch of social service work there through the mission center. And they have daily mass, and their daily masses are like attended like their Sunday masses. Like that's how many people come to daily mass. Like they understand their faith matters because it's really all that they have. And I think that's something we have to learn, like in the Western world, like we have so many other things that can quote unquote seemingly take the place of like what matters most, but in the end they really don't. These people have nothing that can take the place of what matters most, so they cling to what matters most. Yeah, right. Yeah. And I think in some ways that's that simplicity that is the benefit for them. But they come to these and they're like at the end of mass, everybody, like daily masses, everybody's gathering around the priest, and they have statues and they have like rosaries and they have prayer cards, and the priest is just doing holy water blessings for like 15 minutes. I mean, that's the faith of these people. Like, it's until you see it like with your own eyes, it's hard to describe, but like, it's inspiring.
Right.
Like, I want to live like that, you know?
Right. Yeah, sometimes, like, we hear confessions here 6 days a week, and I just try to pay attention, like, when we get bigger, more people coming than not, and obviously first Friday, first Saturday, but sometimes, like, if we've had, like, colder weather, and then we get a nice sunny day, people don't come to confession, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, I think it's kind of an image sometimes of, we have a lot of options, you know, we can go do this. It might be a day to shop, or it might be, you know, this, and it's a more complexity, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, but, simplicity versus complexity, definitely. So, I mean, we have a lot to learn from them, and I mean, it's the body of Christ, right? We share with what we have in benefit and for their benefit, and where do they realize it or not when we go on these trips, when we take our mission teams down there, we do... Right now, we do an annual group mission trip. Our next one's this coming July, July 15th through the, 12th through the 21st, rather 13th through the 21st. If anybody wanted to learn more about that, they could go to our website, givetruewater.org, and sign up. Right. Registration just opened. But when we go on these trips, right, like, it's almost like for me, who's been to tons of developing countries, like, I'm still enriched every time. But for first timers, like, it's a life changer. Like, it was for me on my first trip to Haiti, which I talked about on the episode. Like, it changed my life, set me on the trajectory to do what I'm doing today. And that's what these, like, when we give, when we go to serve, when we go to be on mission to others, oftentimes we come back more transformed than we probably helped them with. Right. And that's just the, it's the beauty of service. Like, that's the call of the gospel, right? Like, the transformation happens in both directions, but oftentimes it happens more for those that are doing the service and doing the mission work than it does to those that are receiving the benefits of that.
Yeah, when I was in Ethiopia, some guy was coughing his head off on the plane, you know, for the big plane ride. And I thought, oh my gosh, it was this still kind of COVID anxiety times. So then a couple of days after I get there, I start coming down with something, and I was, I knew, I said, I got to have COVID, you know, and we were at this retreat center, and a lot of people, I mean, there's like 35 of us or something, or 30, but, so I said, I got to get tested. They didn't have tests. They did have a clinic run by some sisters, just a short walk. And so went over there, and when I got there, it's like it was filled with, not overly crowded, but there was a number of mothers with their babies, you know, their young children, and they were telling me, like, so many of the babies die from typhus and I guess
typhoid,
yeah,
and waterborne illness, it's a killer, deadly.
I guess malaria, and there was some other
malaria is technically a waterborne illness too.
Is it? There was like three, you know, that I forgot the third one was in. And I'm like, and the Ethiopians, a lot of them have like this just beautiful round face, big eyes, you know. And the mothers, they didn't look incredibly stressed, but I just remember thinking, you know, I'm here because I'm just worried about myself and, you know, the other people I'm with to some degree. But it was like they're worried about their kids surviving with what kind of survival rates, you know.
Yeah.
And it really kind of, I really think the whole thing was just to get me to go to a clinic. I think God's plan for me was, Mark, I want you to see a clinic here in Ethiopia. It's like, you know, I don't know. It just cut right through my anxiety, you know, and just said, I've got nothing to worry about here. You know, so these people have something to worry about.
Yeah. I mean, 1 in 10 children under the age of 5 die from waterborne disease somewhere in the world.
Let's talk about some of those numbers. Throw some numbers out for us. Tell us about the water crisis.
It is a crisis. So it's actually some debate, but close to 1 billion people lack access to clean water. The world's population is a little over 8 billion. So that's 1 in 8 people. I mean, that's a serious statistic. Right. That's over 10%, right? Right. 2 billion people lack access to proper sanitation. That means they don't have a toilet. They're going to the bathroom on the ground. That's 1 in 4 people of the world's population. That's 25%.
Right.
Like, that's not, there's 2 of us in the room right now. We had 2 more people. One of us, if we represent that statistic, don't have proper sanitation.
Right.
I don't even remember the number off the top of my head, but it's some astronomically large number, like in the triple digit billions of dollars of economic capacity and GDP is lost every year globally simply due to the global water crisis, due to water lack of access to clean water and proper sanitation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because these people aren't able to get educations, they're not able to hold down a job, blah, 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 blah. And then you get into the mortality statistics, and it's just unreal. Like 869,000 people. So nearly, we just rounded up, because again, these are estimates, right? Yeah. We call it 1 million people that we know of are losing their life due to waterborne disease every year. That's equates to like 2,300 people per day.
And you pointed out in the show too, so I saw this in Ethiopia, like they're just, people are just like continuously carrying water.
Yep.
Like you drive to the countryside, they got like plastic jugs and
So I mean, that's the other thing too. That's what's, you know, driving those statistics of, you know, economic loss and, you know, time lost for these kids that could go to school. Like 435 million school days is lost annually, something like that, due to lack of access to clean water, because these children, oftentimes it's the children and the women that are the ones tasked with to go collect the water while the men work in the field or they go, you know, do a menial labor job so they can provide for their family. And those children aren't able to get an education. Example, we were just in Peru this past summer. We went to visit a community that's going to be the next community we're going to serve. And we're in kind of having a meeting with some of the leaders of this community. We're standing next to the river, which is going to be the primary water source for this community. And I have my phone out and I'm filming, kind of doing some engineering commentary, like pointing out, okay, this is where we're going to have our source water tap. We're going to have our uptake structure here, and, you know, just kind of given some narration for more from a technical perspective. And we were there probably no more than an hour, like late morning, like probably about 10:30 to 11:30. And I kid you not, while we were there, about 15 to 20 teenagers or younger came to the river to get water.
Wow.
And I'm going to put this in perspective. This river is about 1.5 kilometers. That's a little less, a little over a mile, about a mile from the edge of the community. That's going to be the community benefiting from this clean water system that we provide. And these people are walking. It's a downhill. It's about a 30 to 40 meter drop. So we're talking about 150, 160 feet elevation change from the community down to the river. Gravel, dirt, nasty roads. And only a couple of them came like on a dirt bike or a motorcycle. Most of them were walking with the donkey. And I'm filming, right? And just back to this picture, I'm filming, and this is happening while we're my Peru projects and programs director, who's fluent in Spanish and English, and he's meeting with the team, and I'm doing like my own thing, right? And this young girl had walked, she was wearing thong, like flip-flop sandals, had walked down this long path to the river to get water, middle of the day, filling this donkey up, had this donkey she had walked that had four 25-gallon containers on it, mm-hmm. two on each side of the donkey, and she's filling it with water from the river. Yeah. It was the middle of the day. School is in session in Peru. They have a school nearby in the community. She should have been in school.
Right.
She wasn't because she was tasked with getting water that wasn't even clean, that she had to travel probably a good hour and a half round trip just to get. For 100 gallons of water, that's not clean. That's going to provide enough water maybe for her family for 2 days. She's going to have to do it again.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the kind of stuff that like sticks with you, right? That's the kind of stuff that no matter how many statistics you say or tell somebody, like it's not going to stick until that story or until they see it with their own two eyes. And it was true for me too. Like I had heard about some of this stuff before I went to Haiti on that mission trip I described in the episode, but when I saw it with my own two eyes, it was just, it's a game changer, right? You can't unsee it, you can't live the same.
Right.
So,
and part of threefold aspect, the last one was the mission work, right? To bring people to see this and to work to try to remedy the situation.
Yeah, that's our third program that we offer, right?
Tell us about that program. What is that's for college kids or
anybody? So middle school and older, really, actually, because you got to be old enough to be able to, you know, not require a lot of, you know, management. But I mean, honestly, what we do in these trips, it's corporal and spiritual works of mercy. So, you know, we're implementing our education workshop. We're handing out care packages, which I hadn't even touched on that, but and that's part of, and I'll get to that in a minute, I suppose. But we also have a kind of a domestic arm of what we're doing with our missionary efforts, and I'll touch on that, and that the care package component ties into that. But then we also do like manual labor alongside of the community members that, like, where we're implementing breaking ground on construction for a new clean water system. So again, in solidarity with them, alongside them, and then we treat every day like a retreat experience too. So we have daily mass, there's rosary and prayer time. We have end of day small group discussions where we can like kind of open up and break down what's been going on in our experience. You know, it could be something very light or it could go deep, right? And you know, that's that kind of the faith enriching component for those that go on mission with us too, right? And then I kind of mentioned the domestic front. So we're starting to expand in this realm and this avenue. But we recently just got non-parish-based organization affiliation status with the Diocese of Dallas, which is helping us to kind of reach into parishes and offer points of connection and promoting our mission trip and fundraising activities and all those things that are needed to fulfill our mission, right? But also with that, we've developed it's pretty neat, I would say, like a care package program where we do a service night or service day or activity for a few hours with a youth ministry group or a young adult group or just parishioners or whatnot at large. And we prepare gallon-sized bags full of basic water sanitation hygiene materials like hand soap and hand sanitizer and chlorine and bleach. Chlorine tablets and bleach for disinfection and toothbrushes and toothpaste and shampoo. And then we put rosaries in them. We put prayer cards in them. And they're in, you know, all of this is in a single gallon size Ziploc bag. And then the aspiration, the end target of those is to give them to each household in every community that we serve. Ideally, preferably every person. And we do it in junction with our education workshop. So after we've, you know, taught them about best management practices in their homes, we give them a starter kit, if you will, like here, get started. To improve their water and their sanitation, their hygiene, and also their prayer life with the rosary and the prayer cards. And so that's one of the ways that we're kind of reaching out on that domestic arm to, like, even if there's, and most people can't because of costs or time, can't go with us abroad to be in service to these people. They can still be in service here domestically. They can still have a tangible, you know, corporal work of mercy impact on those people. And so that's kind of what we mean by like domestic missions, right? It's kind of connecting that. And it's also bridging the gap. Just like knowledge of this is so limited. which blows my mind still, honestly, because as Catholics, we talk about pro-life issues. We talk about, you know, service and serving the poor and impoverished. You know, yeah, and we tend to, and rightfully so, to agree, like, focus on, like, our domestic challenges with that, with homeless ministry and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And those are all well and good things. Don't get me wrong. I love homeless ministry. I've done a lot of it in my life. And I think it needs to be talked about. Mm-hmm. But what isn't talked about oftentimes is this yeah. particular topic. And I probably give 2 to 3 talks a month at this point. I'm doing a lot of public speaking and mm-hmm. outreach of what we're doing. And I ask the question, how many of y'all in this room have heard of the global water crisis after I've described it a little bit? And I'm not joking you when I say it's less than 30% mm-hmm. raise their hand, mm-hmm. like on a typical group that I'm talking to.
Yeah.
Which just blows my mind yeah. because, and I'm talking to mostly Catholics, yeah. right? And the pro-life, I mean, after abortion, this is like the pro-life issue that we should be talking about in the church, and it's not. And mm-hmm. and why not? I don't know. I don't understand it. And it, you know, the secular world is doing a lot here with humanitarian aid and global development, but they can't do it as well as we can. They can't nourish the body and the soul fully. They can't help these people go from simply surviving to truly thriving. They can't enrich their lives the way that we can offer that in the church, because we have the fullness of the
yeah,
truth, right?
Yeah.
So
I remember talking to a priest friend one time, and this is before he's a priest, but he'd gone on a mission trip down to Mexico and then mm-hmm. came back, and he was struck just within that short little travel time to cross the border stuff. On one side, they had children dying from poor water. And then he said he saw people washing their cars with perfectly clean water, you know, in the United States. And he said it just struck him so deeply, you know, what can we do to help? I guess that was the question.
Yeah. But and I think that would be like, if I were to conclude like with anything, it would just like be a call to action. Like, you know, anybody that is listening to this, in some way, shape, or form, I would hope that their hearts would be moved to for the plight of these people, right?
Right, right.
The reality is, these people would, frankly, have no one to speak for them, mm-hmm. for the most part. If folks like me and others that are doing mm-hmm. this type of work were not. Yeah. I mean, that's mm-hmm. these people are forgotten and left behind, certainly by their own countries and governments,
yeah.
But oftentimes just in general by people. And so we just want to be their voice, right?
Right.
And it's the same, you know, we want to be the voice of the voiceless. We say that all the time with the pro-life movement, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's
yeah.
the same here, to a lesser degree, right? But mm-hmm. still very true. Mm-hmm. And so like my aspiration, my hope would be that like people would be moved like to do something. And there's plenty of ways to support what we're trying to do. I mean, it is a global water crisis, and the statistics are massive. Mm-hmm. But we can create substantial change here. Mm-hmm. And we have many ways that people can jump on board with what we're doing with Veracle Vera Vida to help. They can, like I said, go on a mission trip with us. That's a game changer,
right?
If they can. They can participate in domestic stuff. They can bring us to their parish or their diocese, connect us with people that can help us expand the reach of what we're trying to do on this domestic front. They can give of their prayer time. Mm-hmm. We have a Fountains of Prayer program where we're praying for the specific intentions of the people that we're serving. Mm-hmm. We send quarterly prayer emails out to, you know, pray for Juan Diego. I'm just throwing a name out. I'm trying to like tie it to San Juan Diego. I just came to me. But who has asked for prayers, not for anything water or wastewater related, but because he lost his job maybe.
Right.
And now he's in our prayer list, and maybe he wouldn't have no one otherwise praying for him, right?
Right.
And so that's our Fountains of Prayer program. And then we have opportunities to donate. And obviously, we're a nonprofit NGO. We're in need of that. The need is so great. And what's cool is on average, for every $50 we raise, more or less, we can give clean water to one person for generations to come, because our mission is focused on sustainability. Mm. First project we ever did was $10 per person for that community. Mm. More recently, we're looking at like over $100 per person. But the average has come out to about $50 per person. Mm. So the need is so great. We're looking right now. We have 5 communities in the pipeline that we want to get to as soon as possible. We have limited capacity of funding and time. And so we're trying to move a needle here. We're trying to increase our recurring donation funding by $24,000. I know it doesn't seem like much, but it's a big deal to us between now and July, which when we get to that point, we'll have increased year over year our growth of annual funding by $72,000. If we can get to that point, we'll be able to hire an engineer and we'll be able to grow to the next level. Because right now we're a small staff, we're a small operation. We have 3 paid staff, 30 plus volunteers. We have great people on the ground in Peru to help us move things forward. But we need another engineer on our team to really move the needle on these projects. And the need is so great. The longer we wait, the more these people suffer and die and are left behind. Right. So that would be my call to action. That would be my challenge for anybody that's listening to, like, kind of take it to heart, take it to prayer, and discern what the Lord may be calling you to do. If there's anything that he's calling you to do, don't hesitate to, like, connect with us. Give truewater.org, learn about what we're doing, and connect, and help us put the global water crisis in the history books, and frankly do it in a very Catholic way, the only way that really is the best way to do it.
All right, well, that's a good summation, Jacob. So thanks for joining us, thanks for coming down Life on the Rock, and we'll be praying for you in your ministry.
Thank you.